Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, April 20, 2020. A UN staff escapes from self-quarantine in South Sudan.
The Ministry of Health and the High-Level Task Force were not aware of the travel of this person, and therefore it's considered as a clear violation of the International Health Regulations 2005.
And Sudanese students stranded in Italy during the COVID-19 related lockdown speak out.
It's really frightening, it's scary, and you just feel something you can't explain, but there's so much sadness. It just leaves you speechless, even seeing the number of people who have passed away.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says it will take disciplinary action against a staff member who sneaked out of the country before completing self-isolation. A top health official in South Sudan said the UN staff was one of the 99 people believed to have come into contact with the country's first confirmed case of COVID-19. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
Makur Koryom, who is also spokesperson for South Sudan's high-level task force on COVID-19, accused the UN of sneaking out a staffer on a UN flight.
The Ministry of Health and the high-level task force were not aware of the travel of this person, and therefore it's considered as a clear violation of the International Health Regulations 2005. The high-level task force condemns the act in the strongest terms possible and holds the United Nations system in the country responsible for any unseemly events that may ensue.
In a press release seen by South Sudan in Focus, UNMISS confirmed the person who privately left the country is a UN staff member who was in self-isolation after coming in contact with COVID-19 patient. The statement says the UN staffer was tested for the coronavirus and the results were negative. The UN staffer then flew out of the country unnoticed before he could complete a second round of tests to consider him COVID-19 negative. The UN denies high-level task force allegation that the staffer was flown out of Juba to his home country on a United Nations flight, but rather said it was a commercial flight. The UN expressed its regret over the incident and reassured the Ministry of Health and its task force that it will take action against any UN staffer who fails to adhere to the requirements for testing and self-isolation. The statement went on to say the UN will continue to strictly follow the health protocols relating to COVID-19 and work with World Health Organization and the Health Ministry to reduce the risk of COVID-19 in South Sudan. South Sudan Police spokesperson Major General Daniel Justin told South Sudan in Focus the Ministry of Interior is not aware of the UN staffer leaving the country. Dr. Richard Lino Laku, a member of Technical Secretariat for the High-Level Task Force, says South Sudan has still 4 confirmed cases of COVID-19. Laku says the 7 people who were in contact with a COVID-19 patient in Torit tested negative.
Currently, there is 29 tests of the sample collected from the contacts who are quarantined. Time has elapsed, are currently running in the public health laboratory, and the results will be announced tomorrow.
Dr. Laku urges the public to continue observing all the preventive measures, including washing hands with soap and avoiding crowds. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Some South Sudanese and Sudanese students studying in Italian cities hit hard by COVID-19 say they feel traumatized by the deaths and conditions caused by the pandemic in Italy. The students who spoke with Michael Atit in Khartoum say they feel isolated and lonely. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Hundreds of Sudanese and South Sudanese are enrolled in institutions of higher learning across Italy, and a number of them have known people killed by COVID-19. Some say the experience has scarred them emotionally and is negatively affecting their studies. Linda Dominique Dut, a Catholic nun who hails from South Sudan's northern Bahr Ghazal state, is a student at Pontifical Faculty of Educational Sciences in Rome. Dominique says for more than a month, she and other students have stayed indoors attending online classes only. She says she and hundreds of other nuns in her community have not celebrated the Holy Eucharist for several weeks because priests are unable to access their college due to fear of contracting COVID-19.
It's really frightening, it's scary, and you just feel something you can't explain, but there's so much sadness. It just leaves you speechless, even seeing the number of people who have passed away every day, they tell you this one, and surely there are numbers that even they are not mentioned.
There have been more than 178,000 confirmed cases of coronavirus in Italy, according to the Italian Department of Civil Protection. As of Monday morning, 23,660 people had died. A South Sudanese student who hails from Yei in central Equatorial State and prefers to be identified only as Khamis for fear of offending COVID-19 patients and their families says he has been self-isolating for more than a month in his room. Khamis attends classes online only now and says he misses the interaction with other students to discuss theological issues.
It is not normal for a social being to be staying alone like this for all of these weeks. It's the inside your room alone. So it affects you personally because we are used to interacting with the people. You are used to seeing people. And we are used to mingling with the people, but with this, we couldn't make it again.
Sharon Billy Madison, who is from Eastern Equatorial State, has been attending Milan University in Northern Italy for a master's in pharmacology the past 6 months. Madison says she feels traumatized by the pandemic, but is determined to stay busy inside the four walls of her room.
My activities involve a little bit of studying, attending live lectures, but also to keep my sanity, I listen to music, learn new dance steps, and a little bit of fitness exercises here and there.
Madison says she does everything she can to protect herself, including washing her hands frequently and practicing social distancing to avoid contracting the virus. Mubarak John Kumudan, a Sudanese who hails from the Khartoum Catholic Archdiocese and studies at the Pontifical Urban University in Rome, says he knew people who died from COVID-19. He says through his horrifying experience in Rome, he has learned that human beings must work together to combat the spread of the pandemic.
We have seen the great solidarity among the people and authentic fraternity coming out and much better of human values. I'm seeing an optimistic doctors working all day and night, nurses trying to help the patients, citizens well collaborating with the government and authorities.
The students are encouraging their fellow citizens back in Sudan and South Sudan to cooperate with health authorities and to follow all preventative measures advised by governments and world health experts to stop the spread of COVID-19. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio, reporting for Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Health officials, community leaders, and civil society activists in Yei River County say insecurity is hurting efforts to educate residents about COVID-19 in rebel-controlled areas. Daniel Martin Friday has the story for VOA from Yei Town.
Justus San Victor, executive director for Yamora, a local NGO in Yei Town, says armed rebel groups operating in the area have repeatedly violated the cessation of hostilities agreement, which prevents aid workers from conducting awareness campaigns about the pandemic.
when you look at the recent classes in the side of Mugo, and then also when you look at the abductions that happened in Mukaya, these are issues that are hampering the work of humanitarian agencies from reaching out to the far areas.
Victor Lopai, a community leader in Morobo County, says several residents in Morobo, Bazi, Kaya, Panyume and Lujule villages know nothing about how the coronavirus is transmitted. Speaking in Arabic, Lopai says most of the messages about COVID-19 playing on local radio stations are in English or Arabic and not understood by many of the villagers.
You find that people are staying and doing their activities normally without any knowledge on the preventive measures on COVID-19. People in the villages still share greetings, stay in close proximity with each other, and we are calling on the NGOs dealing on health issues in South Sudan to reach out awareness messages to our people in the villages.
Lopai is also calling on the government and NGOs to involve local chiefs, religious leaders and women in awareness activities. Speaking in Arabic, Dr. James Wani, Director General in the Health Ministry in the now defunct Ye River State, says his ministry coordinates with various security agencies to make sure humanitarian groups can access rebel-controlled areas.
In our meeting, we have been discussing these issues with the security organs to grant us access to go to any location with civil population, because coronavirus does not know whether you are a rebel or someone else.
So Bassam El Manas, spokesman for the rebel holdout group, the National Salvation Front, says the NAS grants unfettered access to all health and humanitarian aid workers.
We don't obstruct or hinder the movement of humanitarian agencies in our location or in the main roads or wherever they want to go. This is part of the decision of facilities agreement.
Soba says fighting the pandemic is a responsibility of all stakeholders, including the government, NGOs and rebel groups. Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, Deputy Military Spokesman for the SPLAIO and Press Secretary for the Ministry of Defense and Veteran Affairs, says the SPLAIO is committed to ensuring free movement for all humanitarian and health workers to conduct awareness campaigns in rebel health areas.
We are not going to restrict anybody. And when it comes to the humanitarian agencies, they are always welcome. And when it comes to the fight against the COVID-19, it's a national duty. So whatever we request from them will be clearance from the task force. That will give them directive to come to our territory. We will allow them to come. We have civilians that need support.
South Sudan's high-level task force on COVID-19 has confirmed 4 cases in the country. Less than 100 people have been tested for the virus in the country. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Yei, Central Equatorial State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, COVID-19 hits flower industry. Find out how after this break.
Do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
why do you think more young people are turning away from farming?
You know, for you to farm, to be a farmer, you have to wait. I'm waiting, and you know, these guys, they don't want to wait. They want the money now. They don't want you to, maybe you plant your corn or maize or yam, and you have to wait till you probably like how many months before it germinates and before you can even harvest.
Maybe because they feel or they view farming to be an old occupation or vocation that are mostly for the villagers. But then I feel farming is one that I know you can generate money from.
In most cases, young people in Africa think white collar jobs are the most earning. But in the real sense, it's the reverse.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Senior World Health Organization officials say there is no evidence that people who have survived coronavirus become immune from the deadly disease and cannot pass the infection to others. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The coronavirus pandemic continues to spread across the world with breathtaking speed and no immediate end in sight. Anxious governments increasingly are grabbing onto the hope that those who have become sickened by this infectious disease will become immune and not pass it on to others. They are pinning their hopes on serologic tests that look for antibodies in a person's immune system to clarify the number of people who have been exposed to the virus. Knowing this, they argue, would allow them to send these people back into the workforce without risk of their getting infected or of infecting others. But head of WHO's Emerging Diseases and Zoonosis Unit, Maria van Kerkhove, says these serologic tests may not be able to provide the information governments are seeking.
Right now, we have no evidence that the use of a serologic test can show that an individual is immune or is protected from reinfection. What the use of these tests will do will measure the level of antibodies, and it's a response that the body has a week or two later after they've been infected with this virus.
These tests will be able to measure the level of antibodies, but Van Kerkhove says that does not mean that somebody with antibodies is immune to the disease. Executive Director of WHO Health Emergencies, Michael Ryan, cautions countries to be prudent and not fix on these tests as a way of establishing the status of an individual. He says there's a lot of uncertainty about the effectiveness of the available tests.
Nobody is sure whether someone with antibodies is fully protected against having the disease or being exposed again. Plus, some of the tests have issues of sensitivity. They may give a false negative result, and we may actually have someone who believes they're seropositive and protected actually in a situation where they may be exposed and, in fact, they are susceptible to the disease.
Ryan says a lot of work still lies ahead to standardize the tests and make sure they are validated. He says great care must be taken to ensure they are not misused, but are used in ways that enhance public health. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Among its many effects, the COVID-19 pandemic has cut deeply into flower sales. This is being felt in the Netherlands, the center of global horticulture industry, and in East African flower exporting countries like Kenya, Ethiopia, where tens of thousands of jobs are increasingly in danger. Marta van der Wolf reports for VOA from Amsterdam.
There is no place in the world where you can find more tulips and roses than in Alsmeer, the world's busiest flower auction just outside of Amsterdam. Each day, thousands of flowers are purchased here and shipped all over the world. But since the coronavirus pandemic began, flower sales have dropped by 50%, says Michel van Schie of the Royal Flora Holland Company.
This is also the period with the most important days for the flower industry, like Valentine's Day, International Women's Day, Mother's Day. So the crisis which we are now facing wouldn't have come at a worse moment than this. Not only there were a lot of unsold flowers, but the flowers that were sold were also sold for very low prices.
That is bad news for Africa's leading flower-growing countries, Kenya and Ethiopia. Flower exporters add about $1 billion annually to the Kenyan economy. But with demand falling sharply, Kenyan exports have dropped by about two-thirds in recent weeks, costing the industry and country millions in revenue. Hosea Machuki is the CEO of the Fresh Produce Exporters Association of Kenya. He says the situation is critical.
And we just hope that when it's all done,
that the industries and the companies that are involved in the horticulture industry will be able to spring back to life, at least to continue their business and to keep their employees. We have about 350,000 Kenyans directly employed, and at the moment about 200,000 are likely to lose their jobs on account of loss of business.
Neighboring Ethiopia is the second largest African flower exporter, and the horticulture sector is the country's fourth largest earner of export earnings. But because of COVID-19, Ethiopia is exporting only about 20% of its usual volume. Frank Ammerlaan is a Dutch flower farmer in Ethiopia. He says once Europe was hit with the coronavirus pandemic, the effects were immediately noticeable in Ethiopia.
Majority of our sales stopped suddenly, and that's because of shops in Europe being closed, borders being closed, logistics to give priority for food items and other essential items. So yeah, it was a big shock for us.
Ammerlaan employs about 1,000 people and usually exports 2 million stems a week to the Dutch flower auction. But business has dropped by 30 to 40%, he says. He and other growers would like to keep Ethiopia's estimated 150,000 flower industry workers employed.
Every farm is really very, very strict on their expenditures. So we have also cut all our unnecessary expenditures. Remember, we always have to see reality. When there's no work anymore, then it will be very difficult to keep the workers employed.
To prevent the Ethiopian flower industry from collapsing and to keep foreign exchange flowing into the country, the government has designated the sector as essential, meaning its companies and workers can keep operating despite the state of emergency measures. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Amsterdam.
Parties to the South Sudan 2018 peace deal have reached a deadlock over how to allocate the country's 10 states. A spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition accuses President Kiir's SPLM faction of trying to violate the terms of the deal. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
A little more than a month ago, after swearing in, ministers and other top officials in the Unity Transitional Government parties to the peace deal have yet to agree on how many governors each side should appoint in the country's 10 states. Under the agreement, President Kiir's SPLM in government is allocated 55%. First Vice President Riek Machar's SPLM IO gets 27%. The South Sudan Opposition Alliance, or SSOA, gets 10%, and other political parties, or OPP, 8%. When these percentages are calculated per the 10 states, President Kiir is allowed to appoint 6 governors, Machar's SPLM IO appoints 3 governors, and the SSOA and OPP get to appoint 1 governor each, according to Josephine Lagu, chairperson of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance. Under this power-sharing formula, 11 governors would be appointed, which exceeds the number of states by 1. SPLM IO officials say President Kiir has proposed to appoint caretaker governors as the parties work to resolve the matter. SPLM IO spokesperson Peter Manawa says his party opposes Kiir's suggestion.
We feel like we should agree, all of us, that we should promote peace and security in the country. Also, we should stick to the agreement and the letter and spirit that some people, they thought they can use some part of the agreement provision to change it and to force people to accept their ideas. Otherwise, they want to take the country back to the war, which is not acceptable to the SPLM IO.
Manawa also accused President Kiir of signing the wrong copy of the amended constitution.
As you know, the National Constitution Amendment Committee has finished amendment of the constitution, ratified the agreement, to amend the constitution. But unfortunately, after President signed the amended constitution, we came later to know that there were some changes, which is a serious violation of the agreement.
In February, with just days to go before the deadline to form a unity government, President Kiir agreed to revert back to 10 states plus 3 administrative areas. When asked to comment on the stalemate over appointing governors to the 10 states, government spokesperson Michael McQuay had this to say.
I've not yet got that, so I cannot react to it. We don't respond to things that are done in the social media.
Josephine Lagu says challenges in calculating the percentages outlined in the deal for allocating states to the parties should be addressed. Lagu says they agreed to percentages at up to 11 states, even though there are only 10.
The arguments that were being advanced is, okay, you know, 55.5 can be rounded up to 60% of the power sharing allocation for IT, you know, and then IO is arguing that there also can be rounded up to 30%, so they would, you know, qualify for 3 states, and OPP also was arguing likewise, yes, you know, there is 0.8%, so they're also entitled to 1 state. Indeed, you know, if you look at it that way, you know, all of them are right.
Manawa says while talks between the parties aimed at resolving the matter continue, the parties need to reflect on the purpose of the agreement, which is to restore peace in South Sudan.
What we need is to unite the people of South Sudan to promote peace and security and to guarantee rule of law. Because at the end of it, the aim of the agreement is to unite the people of South Sudan and to bring peace.
Mm-hmm.
The way our partners are implementing the agreement, I don't think I will accept or will be part of this violation.
Aside from this agreement over the number of governors allotted to each party, Lagu says COVID-19 has delayed the formation of state governments due to the reduction of working hours. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Sarah by Colonel Mido.
Hey, Bamba Taisi to Sarah. Tahila anaibu sara binia kiafa anaibu sara binia tamama anaibu sara binia tanina tahila anaibu sara binia kiafa anaibu sara mimi nalisa sukerini. Subway.
masakila makum sare kuliyom masakila makum sare akulupata kuliyom we pijama e akulupata kuliyom we pijama e.
We've been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Sara. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for listening, and remember to stay at home, wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ana biga bista kal kafir, asan dapat akhirnya tasara.